The Killing Season by Arthur Jefferson. Episode 4.
Dead man was Bill Garwood, not old Mr. Driscoll. I now had to explain the mistake to Driscoll's daughter, Jane.
I don't understand. What are you saying?
The dead man in the cellar isn't your father. I've made a terrible mistake, and I take full responsibility.
Then who is he?
His name is Garwood, William Garwood. He is, or rather he was, a cheap little crook with a string of convictions for housebreaking, robbery with violence, grievous bodily harm.
But you said he was my father.
I made that assumption, and I had no right to make it, I'm sorry. We subsequently found your father's wallet and keys on Garwood. So it must have been him who mugged your father on Christmas Eve, then decided to use his keys to get inside this house.
He was the burglar?
Yes.
How did he come to fall down the stairs?
Possibly he thought the door led to another room, walked inside in the dark, and fell headlong onto the stone floor.
How awful.
Not really, Miss Driscoll. The way you used that cosh, you could have fractured your father's skull.
I suppose so. You will keep looking for Dad, won't you?
Oh, we've got patrols out now. Yes, Doctor?
Can I have a word, Inspector?
Oh, sure. Excuse me.
Of course.
We're removing the body now. I'll do the post-mortem first thing in the morning.
If that's soon enough for you, Mr. Farnham.
No need to be efficient with this one, Doctor. I've got no interest at all in the case.
Tomorrow morning's fine, Doctor. I'd appreciate a copy of your report as soon as possible.
Right.
Oh, hold on, Doctor. Inspector, sorry to put my two penneth in, but I'd like you to pass this case over to someone else. We've rather more important matters to attend to, and it's only a simple little accident to a Tuppenny Halfpenny villain.
Why don't I just send it to the station, then you can all fight over it.
Doesn't seem to have the proper Christmas spirit, that doctor, does he? Oh, well. An eventful day. Early night, I think. And let's hope I don't dream of men with smashed heads. Don't forget, Inspector, you and the constable. 10 sharp in the morning. Good night.
Good night, sir.
Good night, sir. What's all this tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock sharp stuff?
He wants us at the computer center.
Oh, does he? Then he can forget it. Tomorrow's rest day. I've worked Christmas Eve. I've worked Christmas Day. But he thinks I'm working Boxing Day as well. He's got another thing coming.
I'll call for you at 9:30.
That ain't fair.
No, it's not fair, but I'll call for you at 9:30.
All right, all right. I'll be ready. You're going now.
I've got to break the sad news to Debbie Garwood. Another nice job for Christmas Day.
Yeah.
I suppose you want to come along?
No, thanks. I think I'll hang on here for a bit, make sure Jane... Miss Driscoll's all right.
As I drove to Debbie Garwood's house, my mind was in a whirl. Farnham might think Billy's death was a straightforward accident, but there were too many things that didn't add up. If Billy had the keys to the front door, why did he have to force a window open at the back? And Billy was one of those neat, methodical burglars. The only mess he ever made was on the faces of those who disturbed him at his work. The doctor said he appeared to have been coshed, so who coshed him? All these thoughts were racing round and round in my mind as I parked the car outside Garwood's house. I knew Debbie was going to take the news badly, very badly.
Mr. Carter.
Hello, Debbie. Do you think I can come in for a minute?
If you want Billy, he's still not turned up, I'm afraid.
No, I haven't come to see Billy.
Oh, right. Well, we'll go in the lounge then.
They say opposites attract. Billy was an animal, but Debbie was something else. It was her childlike, trusting innocence about her. I didn't know how I was going to break the news.
Can I get you a drink?
Yes, please.
What would you like? Whiskey? Gin? Brandy? We've got the lot.
Brandy, please.
a bit spiffy myself, I'm afraid. Sitting here waiting for Billy, thinking the worst. There's nothing to do but drink. I can't take it, though. A couple of small baby shams and I'm legless. Soda there, if you want it.
Oh, Ty.
Don't just stand there. Sit down. Try the settee. Want one of Billy's cigars?
Look, Deb. About Billy, I've got some bad news.
You've arrested him?
No, worse than that.
He's killed someone. I knew he would. I knew it would end up like this.
Debbie, he's dead. Billy's dead.
Dead? How?
He was burglaring the house. Slipped down some stairs. Broke his neck. It happened sometime last night.
It's not true.
I'm afraid it is, Deb. I saw the body.
Would you pour me a brandy, please?
Oh, yeah, of course. Here.
Thank you. You're not having me on. It's not a sick joke. That door's not going to open in a minute and my Billy's coming grinning all over his face.
He's dead, Debbie. You've got to face up to it.
Right. Unzip me.
What?
Heard? He's dead. The bastard's dead. That's the best Christmas present I've ever had. Please.
I'm pretty sure Debbie would have been the best Christmas present I'd ever had. But I turned her down. And I cursed myself for a pretty stupid fool all the way back home in the car. Kept trying to convince myself I'd done the right and proper thing. And remained thoroughly unconvinced. I wondered how young Nuttall was getting on with Jane Driscoll.
It's only instant, I'm afraid.
Oh, no, it's fine. Thanks, great. The name's Derek, by the way.
Oh, I'm Jane.
Sounds like one of those old Tarzan films. Me, Derek, you, Jane.
It starts to snow.
Yeah, so it has. The only Christmassy thing that's happened today...
My father's out in that.
He may not be. He could still be in that hospital.
But you searched it.
As well as we could. Your father will be all right. Don't worry.
I'll try.
You work away from Melford, then?
Yes, a long way away.
What do you do?
I'm a marine biologist.
Are you kidding? A marine biologist, like porpoises and things?
Seals, actually. I'm on a project for the Melford Wildlife Trust.
Oh, they've got an uninhabited island somewhere, haven't they?
Yes, a bird and animal sanctuary. Ah. But it's not quite uninhabited. I live there.
What, on your own?
No, there's four of us. John Graham and his wife. Well, they're Americans, studying bats.
Bats?
Oh, we've got caves full of them. Then there's Sandy Harris. He's our ornithologist.
Oh, this Sandy Harris, boyfriend, is he?
Sandy? Good Lord, no. He's a darling, but he must be at least 60.
So, no boyfriend?
No.
What on earth do you do for relaxation?
I work. Well, it's 6 miles of rough seas to the mainland and nearly 10 more miles until you come to the village. So we usually stay put.
That's all right. You don't like crowds.
I hate crowds. It's getting late. I don't think I want to stay here tonight. Is there a hotel I could go to?
Look, Jane, don't take this the wrong way, but there's a spare room at my digs. Well, I can get the station to phone through if there's any news on your father. So there'll be no worries on that score. What'd you say?
It's still snowing.
Yeah. Set in for the night.
Yeah. You sure to be all right? Your dig?
Oh, yeah, of course. You get in, I'll drive.
What is it?
That grey jag by the corner. The two men inside seem to be taking a great interest in your house.
Well, there's nothing left for anyone to steal.
Nevertheless, I think I'll take a walk over. See what they're up to.
Be careful.
I'll be all right. Hey, just a minute.
Look out!
Did you see that? They tried to run me down.
My night wasn't going too well either. I drifted off into an uneasy sleep where Debbie Garwood, all bare arms, legs and body, kept invading my dreams. Then, at a minute past midnight... Carter?
Doctor here, Inspector. Forensic lab. A report on that second blood sample.
You know it's gone midnight.
I was told it was extremely urgent, Inspector. Sorry if I'm spoiling your Christmas, but your damn Mr. Farnham has certainly ruined mine.
Yeah, I see. What is the result of the blood test?
Traces of identical substances, as in that of Emily Dickinson.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I drifted back to sleep and to Debbie. Her zip kept jamming. But just as I got it free. Two o'clock. Carter.
Hello, Inspector. Farnham here. I didn't wake you, I hope.
Oh, 2 o'clock in the morning? Of course not.
Splendid. Get dressed, there's a good chap. I'll be honking my horn outside your place in exactly 10 minutes.
Good of you to come, Inspector.
Didn't know I had any choice.
Someone broke into the vicarage and coshed the vicar.
Why can't the duty patrol handle it?
Because I phoned the station and told them we'd take over.
Why?
Last night, the fire at the church hall. Tonight, the vicar is attacked. So I'm interested.
Oh, well, while I think of it, forensic phone. Traces of similar substances in the second blood sample.
So poor Mr. Crisp could have been drugged before being drowned in the bath. And gratifying when one's hunches start to work out.
How did you know about the vicar being coshed?
Oh, I happened to be awake, and my radio just happened to be tuned into the police frequency.
Funny how these things just happen.
The reason I was awake and listening to the radio was because I was on my way back from the computer center.
At 2 o'clock in the morning?
Yes. Another attempted break-in. Didn't get very far this time. Breached the outer security fence, knocked out a guard, drugged his dog... But he set off an alarm near the main building.
Did you get him?
Alas, no. On the basis that lightning never strikes in the same place twice, I didn't increase the skeleton holiday staff.
And you reckon it's the same people behind this as the other break-in?
Isn't that obvious?
Well, I'll tell you something that is obvious, Mr. Farnham.
You have my undivided attention.
If the man I shot yesterday had got out the information they were after, they wouldn't have had to send someone else in to finish the job.
You know, Inspector... I hadn't thought of that. I've got such a devious mind, you see. I was thinking they got exactly what they wanted at the first attempt.
So why the second break-in?
A ploy. To make us believe that their first attempt hadn't succeeded, when all the time it had.
What?
On the other hand, of course, it could have been a double bluff. Oh, what a complicated, devious, untrustworthy world we live in. I turn right here for the vicarage, don't I?
There's not an awful lot I can tell you, Mr. Farnham.
All contributions gratefully received, Vicar, no matter how small. Oh, your head.
Yes.
Well, didn't the doctor give you anything for the pain?
He left those tablets. I've had one. I don't like taking too many.
Oh, they won't do you any good on your desk. Here, swallow them down.
Water for the vicar, Inspector.
So, what happened, sir?
Since the fire, I haven't been sleeping too well.
Sir.
About half... About half past one this morning, I heard a noise like glass breaking. I got out of bed and went to the window. I could see a car parked in the shadow of the church hall. And then there was a noise from downstairs. I put on my dressing gown and tiptoed down. There was a man in the hall, his back to me. He opened the door to the living room and... flashed a torch inside. And there was this glow to the back of my head. I must have been unconscious for about half an hour. I phoned the police, but the men had long since gone.
So there were at least two of them?
Yes.
As far as you can tell, has anything been taken?
No. Nothing at all.
They were very tidy burglars. Didn't make the slightest mess.
The man you saw, he opened the living room door and flashed his torch around. He didn't go inside.
That's right.
How peculiar. What sort of car was it?
I've no idea. It was well in the shadows. They must have been sleeping tablets. You have to excuse me, gentlemen.
It was well past 3 o'clock on that freezing cold morning when Farnham dumped me off at my place and cheerfully reminded me to be at the computer center 10 a.m. on the dot. I staggered back to bed and was out like a light the minute my head hit the pillow. The next sound I heard should have been the alarm clock. Again. Carter.
Sergeant Plummer from the station, Inspector. Good morning.
Morning. It's still night.
6 o'clock. Opposite day morning, Mr. Carter.
Oh, you better have a damn good reason for waking me up.
Might have another body for you.
You're joking.
Well, it's all a bit iffy. We picked up old Arthur Ferris about half an hour ago.
What?
He was staggering along in the middle of the road in a dazed condition. Nasty lump on his forehead. Cuts on his face. Blood all over his clothes.
So?
He says he really has killed somebody this time.
He confesses to murder every other week.
Yes, I know, but I get the feeling that this time he might just be telling the truth.
So where's the body?
He forgets.
I'll give it to someone else. I'm not on duty till this evening.
You're on standby, Inspector, and there's no one else handy at the moment.
Oh.
They're all out looking for your missing hospital patient.
Well, Driscoll? He's not been found yet.
No, and I doubt if he will be.
What?
You cast an eye out of the window. He's having a rehearsal with Scott at the Antarctic out there.
All right, Sergeant. We'll be with you in about 10 minutes.
We?
6 o'clock in the morning, freezing cold, blowing a blizzard. You don't think I'd let Detective Constable Nuttall miss the fun, do you?
He might not be too pleased at being disturbed.
What do you mean?
You'll see, Inspector. You'll see.
You fool. You stupid damn...
I don't know what you're talking about.
Supposed to be blind, am I? I saw her. As soon as you opened the door, I saw her. She scuttled back into the bedroom, but she wasn't quick enough.
What was she supposed to do? Stay in her father's house, window smashed, everything in a mess. Blood all over the cellar. Allowed to spend the night round my place. Is that a crime?
It may not be a crime, but it's pretty damn stupid.
Why?
You shouldn't even have to ask. She's involved in a case we're working on.
For what? I'm not a doctor. I haven't taken the Hippocratic Oath.
If the super ever found out,
there's nothing
end of...
to find out. We've got 2 bedrooms.
Yeah, they've got 20 bedrooms in the Melford Arms, but that doesn't mean there's only one person in each
of
them.
I tell you, nothing happened.
It's still a stupid thing to do.
All right, so I'm stupid. Can we please drop it, sir?
Stop calling me sir.
Sorry. How did Debbie Garwood take it?
Take what?
The news about Billy.
Oh, badly. Well, very badly indeed.
Couple of gentlemen to see you, Arthur.
Huh? Oh. Hello, Inspector. Constable. Oh, I told you I'd do it. I warned you.
That's a nasty bump on your forehead. The doctor's seen it.
He's on his way. Weather's probably holding him up.
Very nasty. How did you do it, Arthur?
I don't remember. I expect he did it.
Who's he?
Well, the man I killed. I warned you. I can't control myself, Inspector. I get these headaches. Blinding flashes of pain. And then I kill. I'm a monster. A murderer. An animal.
You're a bloody pig. You ate the eggs and bacon I was saving for my breakfast.
Well, after the kill, you get ravenous.
I thought it was
after
sex.
Yeah, all right, Sergeant. Now, you said there was blood on his clothes.
Yeah, on his jacket, look.
Fair amount there. Did it have come from that cut on his head?
Oh, too much for that, I'd have thought. There's blood on his hands, too.
Cigarette, Arthur?
What? Oh, yeah,
Tom. Now, tell us what happened.
I don't remember. I just know I killed him. You've got to believe me.
I'd like to, Arthur, but where's the body?
I don't remember.
You must have some idea, Arthur. Indoors, out of doors, where?
I don't remember, Inspector. I don't remember a thing.
Well, Inspector. Ah, PC John. How come we're saddled with Arthur Ferris again? Didn't I tell you to take him back to his brother's house?
Well, that's what I did, sir.
To the front door, knock at the door, see that he got inside.
Well, I dropped him off at the gate. He said he'd be all right.
Never mind what he damn well says. In future, you do what I say.
Yes, sir.
So what do you want?
Detective Sergeant Bishop phoned from the Driscoll House. He'd like to see you. He said there's some complication.
Tell him he'll be right over.
Yes, sir.
What should I do about Arthur?
Yeah, when the doctor arrives, tell him he wants a blood sample, then send the sample and the jacket over to forensic. If the blood on the jacket is his own, send him home, and that means getting him inside the house. But if it's someone else's blood, hold and let me know.
Right.
Come on, Nuttall, let's get over to the Driscoll House.
All right, Sergeant Bishop, what have you got for us?
Well, first thing I did, Inspector, was just try and find out what was missing. It's one hell of a mess in here, as you can see.
Yeah, we were here last night.
We've been trying to contact his daughter, but we don't know where she is.
Oh, I don't know where we can find her, if necessary. But she won't be able to help much. Hasn't been in the house since her father moved down from London.
Oh, fair enough. Anyway, we got one of the neighbours in. According to him, Driscoll had a colour TV, a video recorder, expensive cine camera and projector.
Hmm?
A Leica single lens reflex, whole list of things. Thousands of quid worth of stuff. We've searched. None of it's in the house.
Nicked.
What else? Which means that either Billy Garwood had an accomplice who made off with the money.
Oh, I can't buy that. Billy always worked alone.
And he never made a sort of mess we found here, eh? Mm. Or there were two separate lots of burglars. Billy Garwood and someone else.
Yeah, that fits in with something that's been bugging me, Sergeant. Billy had the keys to the house, yet someone forced the back window to get in. Yeah, you sold me two lots of burglars, I think. Now, did they happen separately or at the same time?
You're wondering if the other housebreakers didn't like Billy butting in, so they pitched him down the stairs.
Yeah.
Which means murder?
If he was cushed, it does. But wait for the results of the post-mortem before you jump to any conclusions. Anything else?
Found a neighbour who said she'd seen a grey car hanging about outside for the past couple of nights.
A grey car? It was here last night, two men inside. When I went over to question them, they roared off, nearly knocked me down.
First I've heard of this. Did you report it?
No, Inspector.
Why not? More important things on your mind?
It was late.
I don't care how late it was. What sort of a car was it?
A grey Jag. Fairly old.
Registration number?
Didn't get it.
Well, when we get back to the station, you make a full report. If anyone wants a sergeant, we'll be over at the computer center.
Right, gentlemen. Sit down. Dead on time. That's what I like to see. Shows keenness.
Now, this won't take long, will it, Mr. Farnham? Things are getting a bit hectic with our other cases.
You can forget your other cases, Inspector. Your work for me takes precedence over everything else.
Well, that's all very well,
is
sir,
it?
But...
Splendid. That's all settled, then? Excuse me. Farnham. Oh, yes, he's here. One moment. For you, Inspector, Detective Sergeant Bishop. Oh, tell him he's on his own from now on, will you?
Carter? What? Yeah. Just a minute, I'll write it down. Pen.
Yeah.
Right. Fractured skull. Not caused by fall. Blunt instrument. So, it's murder. Well, it's your case now, Sergeant. Yes, all yours. Yeah, you got to call out for that grey Jag. Good. I'll see you. Bye. Oh, I'm afraid I've written on the back of one of your computer printouts, Mr. Farnham.
No matter. What was that about?
Confirmation that Billy Garwood died as a result of being cosh. We think there were other burglars in the house when he broke in, and they dealt with him accordingly.
There's no justice in this world, is there? Ah, but that's your detective sergeant's headache. We've more important matters. This, for example.
The burnt photograph from the fire.
I'd set the computer to work on it. I want to know more about it. Now, we can only see two people. Both, alas, deceased. But it's part of a larger group. There's part of an arm there, near the burnt edge. So who was in that group? And where was the photograph taken?
How can a computer tell you where it was taken?
No, bear with me. A computer has more tricks up its sleeve than just getting your electricity account wrong. Now, look at the background. Would you say that was C?
Just a grey blur.
Could be anything.
Yes, even the computer couldn't sort that out. Now, pay attention to this section. Those fuzzy, out-of-focus shapes. Any ideas?
Rocks? hills?
Could be either, with no point of reference to tell us their size. But it's now time for the magic lantern show. Pull the blind, please, Constable.
Yes, sir.
And now, turn out the lights. No holding hands in the back row. Oh, damn. I can't find the projector. Oh, there. The first thing we did was to make an enlargement of that part of the photograph. You can see it on the screen.
Yeah, they still look like rocks or hills.
Our experts decided they were rocks, but that's not all. Observe those strange, uneven shapes on them. Here. And over here.
They're just blurred.
Granted. So to satisfy our insatiable curiosity, we decided to enlarge that part even further, as the next slide will show. There.
The same blurs, only bigger.
Precisely. They're in the distant background and well out of focus. The lens would, of course, have been focused on our happy little group in the foreground, say about 7 feet from the camera. We made a few assumptions on the focal length of the lens and the possible distance of the background. Now it starts getting very technical, but basically, we asked the computer to compute the degree it was out of focus and what the image would be like if that degree did not exist.
You lost me.
And me.
Now, let me show you what the computer finally came up with. Voila!
They look like animals?
Yes. We computer compared them with the outlines of all known animals. They're seals.
Seals?
Yes. Which, of course, doesn't get us much further. It's clearly not a zoo. So where else do you get seals? The Antarctic? North Pole?
Get them off the coast of England. They're very common.
How come you know so much about seals?
Jane, Miss Driscoll told me. She's a marine biologist.
A what?
A marine biologist. They do have female marine biologists, you know.
I'm so glad. So where does she practice her marine biology?
She's doing a project for the Melford Foundation Wildlife Trust.
Uh-huh. That fire at the church hall. The papers that were burnt. The vicar said they were to do with the Wildlife Trust, didn't he?
Yes, but I don't see...
We none of us see anything yet. Where does she work?
Chestnut Island. It's a wildlife sanctuary.
And are there seals on Chestnut Island?
One of the largest colonies on the west coast.
A father missing? Asked Burgold. I wonder.
Sir?
There are hidden depths to you, Constable. Airline hostesses, nurses, marine biologists. No one could say your girlfriends have mundane jobs. Let's go and see Miss Driscoll right away, shall we?
Miss Driscoll would tell us about the photograph, about the group who posed on the island with the seals in the background, the group who grinned into the camera and said cheese, and months later, at Christmas, would all have to die.
In episode 4 of The Killing Season by Arthur Jefferson, the cast was Detective Inspector Carter, Sean Barrett, Detective Constable Nuttall, Michael Jenner, Police Sergeant Plummer, John Hollis, Police Constable Jordan, Mark Straker, Detective Sergeant Bishop, William Eagle, and Farnham, Alan Cuthbertson. The Vicar, Anthony Hall, Doctor, Mark Jones, Debbie Garwood, Rosalind Thomas, Jane Driscoll, Dion Inman, and Arthur Ferris, Manning Wilson. The Killing Season is directed by Jerry Jones.